Welcome to the Native Advertising Powerhouse, a podcast dedicated to help publishers and native ad studio professionals build a solid framework for their native advertising efforts. The host of the show is Jesper Lawson, founder of the Native Advertising Institute.
My name is Jesper Lawson, and you're listening to the fourth episode of the Native Advertising Powerhouse. If you haven't already subscribed to the podcast, then remember to do so on iTunes or SoundCloud. I'm going to kick this podcast off with an apology for the sound quality. We had some minor problems with the cross-Atlantic internet stability and mean construction work going on outside our offices. But don't worry, it's still more than good enough for you to get all the awesome insights from this week's guest, Tim Clark, VP and Head of Native Advertising at SAP. Thank you for being on the show, Tim.
Thank you.
So, Tim, I'd like to start out with you telling us a little bit about what your background is and what it is that you do in terms of native advertising at SAP.
Well, first, thanks for having me on the show. This is great. I'm always happy to talk about native advertising. It's an exciting area for us. So my background is journalism. I have a journalism background. I was a business reporter and editor for a number of years. I was editor-in-chief of a magazine called Consumer Goods Technology, which is a fairly popular, I guess you'd say, B2B publication here in the States. And from that experience, I really kind of fell into working or crossing over, I guess they say, to the dark side of PR for a lot of tech companies, JDA software being one of them. And then eventually from JDA Software, I moved over to SAP. Some of the folks at SAP I had relationships with while I was working in the tech space. So as time went on, you could kind of see where things were shifting, right? You could see that publications were struggling a little bit to figure out a new business model, whereas on the corporate side of the house, they too were struggling, but they needed, I guess you could say, people who knew how to write and communicate and tell good stories. So that's kind of where I'm at now, and been with SAP for about 10 years, and yeah, like you said, currently leading the native advertising efforts at SAP.
And could you share with us a little bit about how SAP got into to native advertising?
Sure. So we've had a very strong relationship with Forbes magazine for a number of years. They've been a great partner for us on the print side. We do a lot of sponsorships and advertising with them, get involved with a lot of their events. And I think it was back in 2011 when they approached us with this new way of reaching readers or an audience called AdVoice. Wasn't called native advertising at the time. In fact, neither of us really knew what we were doing or what it was going to be called or how it was going to shake out. But we piloted or co-piloted this thing with them called AdVoice, which is basically, you know, a digital form of advertorial, if you want to call it that, which allowed us to extend our current investment with them into this digital realm a little bit more and allow us to blog or tell stories on their platform and have our content kind of, you know, assimilated with the rest of the publication.
And that's what they call Brand Voice today. It pivoted into that.
And yeah, they call it Brand Voice today. Kind of morphed over the years and continue to innovate and update their platform. So yeah, we've been at it for a while with them. I did speak to somebody, I think, at the Native Advertising Institute about this also. I mean, it kind of was by accident, you know. It was a very, very happy accident that we co-piloted this thing with them that turned into this amazing, I guess, vehicle for us, positioned us as, you know, thought leaders, as pioneers in this space, this native advertising space. And I think it helped move the needle quite a bit with this new business model for publishers, because don't forget, when this first came out, there was a lot of skepticism. A lot of people are actually, angry, you know, like, how dare people and how dare publishers merge advertising and content together like this? This is just not right. This is not good. And I think through quality storytelling, through some other things that have taken place, you know, that's an old conversation now. Obviously, it's an accepted media technique now for sure. I mean, it's very well established, and pretty much everyone and who's anyone has some sort of native advertising offering nowadays, which is really cool.
But there's still I find some skepticism. You know, every now and then there's a new piece of research being done where any given audience would be skeptical about brands telling so-called doing so-called journalism. And what some of these surveys also show is that it can have sort of a backlash both on the brand, but also on the publication of the publisher. So to avoid that as a brand, what would you advise brands to do to avoid this criticism?
Well, I think you have to certainly, first and foremost, you have to put yourself in the shoes of the reader, right? You can't just use these platforms to shout and push your message, because that's kind of what I think what gets people in more trouble. You know, if it's sort of a sales pitch that kind of gets integrated in with the regular content mix at a publication, that might come across as a little bit disingenuous, and that's where you lose trust with readers and your audience. And I can totally see that. So, you know, we toss around this term authentic or authenticity, I think, maybe a little too loosely. I think we're certainly a little bit guilty of that, but we try. You know, we try every day to tell really good, authentic stories. Mm-hmm. And what that means really is just for a company like SAP, sometimes it's really just allowing the customer, one of our customers, to tell their story. You know, what keeps them awake at night? What is their business challenges? Mm-hmm. And sharing that, you know, in this case with the Forbes audience, with light mentions of SAP, right? They will talk about how they use our products and solutions a little bit. But that's what it is. It's all about the authentic storytelling. I think that helps alleviate some of the concerns. If the readers know that they're getting something good from you, and we've, you know, proved this out time and time again, they don't mind sharing your story. They don't mind telling their friends about it, their family about it.
Right.
You know what I mean? So the metrics bear that out. This isn't just me making this stuff up. It's, you know, you have to spend some time with your storytelling, making sure it's quality storytelling, authentic storytelling.
When we talk to publishers, you know, across the globe, that's one of the things that they're struggling the most with when you know, trying to convince brands to go into native advertising and do, you know, good storytelling, is that brands tend to oftentimes want to jump into telling about their products. And you seem to have the opposite opinion on that. But have you had situations still in SAP where you might have done stories that was a little too brand-centric? Or?
Yes, I mean, it happens, you know, all day, every day. You know, this constant educational process that you have to go through, because I think social media, I think the way that everybody's consuming content nowadays, it's just, you know, the 24/7 news cycle, all of that plays into this, right? Because everybody's fighting for attention. Everybody's trying to get their message out there. And because there's so much content out there, and I'm not even talking just about industry content or branded content, I'm talking about content in general. You know, and everybody really, you know, you're competing with CNN, you're competing with the Wall Street Journal, you're competing with all of these other great publications that take up other people's time. Mm-hmm. And so you really have to think about that. So, yeah, I mean, in your haste to get stories out, sometimes you are a little too aggressive with, you know, mentioning your brand or talking about yourself too much. But it comes from a place of concern. It comes from a place of, you know, honesty and integrity. It's not that whoever the author may be is trying to deceive anyone. It's just that they don't know any better. You know, they think that that's probably the best way to tell the story. And in fact, we've, you know, learned pretty quickly that it's not always the case. Mm. You know, those truly targeted branded stories that talk a lot about yourself, they are valuable to a certain audience on different platforms, perhaps. Not so much on the native channels, you know. Mm. But again, it is a learning process, and we don't always get it right. But, you know, we try every day to do the best we can. It's a very, very fine line, I think, sometimes, especially when you're talking about a company like SAP, who has literally hundreds of thousands of customers, big, huge multinational company that we are, right? We have tons of different stories to tell. What's the best way to tell those stories?
Yeah.
Sometimes you do need to talk about yourself. If you're the one breaking the news, if you've got this great new technology out there, that's when you shouldn't let those concerns surface too much, like we're talking about. Then you should feel free to take a few chances and, you know, just let people know what you're talking about, what this means, and not be scared to maybe link back to your website or a solution page so that people understand what you're talking about.
Right.
That I think is okay, you know, but a whole story of that, no, not so good.
Right. But you are, after all, trying to make a living out of this. So
exactly. At some point, you have to tie back to the business, and you have to do it in a way that's not going to offend your audience or make them feel like they're being spammed. You know.
You mentioned just now that the author is not trying to deceive anybody. We do research on the media industry, as both the news media industry and the magazine industry.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows that somewhere, you know, depending on the industry, somewhere around 10-11% of them are actually publishing native advertising without any kind of label on it. And when we asked them, so why do you do that? You know, obviously it's illegal, you know, for, mm-hmm. for one. And they say that it's often, you know, most oftentimes the brands that are, you know, looking to not get this label of advertising on it. What would you say to a publisher who came up to you and tried to engage you with that and, you know, offering you not to label it as sponsored content or native advertising or what have you? Would you be tempted by that?
No, I would not. I would reject that because we have, again, we've proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that you don't need to run away from your brand if you do this the right way.
Mm.
Okay, if you are forthright, if you're upfront, if you partner with somebody like Forbes or Inc. magazine, you know, you obviously have to comply by their editorial standards and rules and their branding. You know, all of that is taken care of upfront. You know, the native advertising part of it, if you will, follows you around. That identifier follows you around so people know that you are an advertiser.
Mm.
That all disappears anyway if the story is good.
Right.
You know, people aren't, you know, saying, oh my gosh, I can't read this. This is from an advertiser.
Mm.
Again, if the story is strong, people don't care if it comes from an advertiser. They really don't. And so I don't think that we need to go down that path. I really don't. I don't think we need to, I guess, very secretly kind of add content into the slipstream that doesn't identify who we are or where it came from. I don't, it's not that I don't think it's fair. I just don't think it's necessary, you know, and for a company like SAP, brand is so important to us, you know, and we keep climbing in brand stature each and every year.
Okay.
We aren't here to just kind of hide. We want people to know who we are. We want people to be exposed to our brand and know what our colors are, what SAP is, what it stands for, what our big, you know, marketing campaigns are. We want people to know that Clive Owen is our spokesperson, you know, that we celebrate autism in the workplace, that we celebrate women in the workplace. All of these things, you know, tie back to our brand. You can't do that by hiding from the brand.
So you're saying that you can't, you know, get the full benefit of the project if you hide your brand?
Correct. I mean, for us, absolutely, that is the case. It just doesn't make sense. You know, I think maybe for other people, maybe, you know, a more, I guess, anonymous way of doing native advertising, maybe that would work for them. I'm not sure. It just depends on the goals. It doesn't sound like you need to go down that path, though. I mean, I think, like I said, if you do this the right way, you don't have to, you know, do that. You don't have to resort to maybe some of these tactics that might come back to not look so positively on your brand. You know,
right.
People find out who you are, and, you know, you might as well just be upfront about it, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the goals of SAP today. So you went into native advertising kind of by coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
But why are you still doing native advertising today? You know, what are you trying to achieve?
Well, it, you know, I guess depending on who you ask, right? The print stuff is fading a little bit, right? We hear all of these stories every day about how nobody's reading anymore or reading magazines or traditional print. So I think a part of it is that, is just being, you know, digitally active with a major, major publication like Forbes, which has a tremendous reach.
Mm.
But beyond that, really, you know, if you look at the traditional definition of native advertising, which really is partnering with a publication like Forbes and assimilating to that brand, that's why we do it. You know, we do it, again, because of our brand and because of the advertising. So if you look at how Forbes started this, how we pioneered this with them, you know, it does tie back to the advertising at the end of the day. I mean, this is what keeps us going, is the actual ads, the creative ads that wrap around our stories. This is why we do native advertising. When we tell stories and they get circulated out into the world and promoted out into the world, which Forbes does a very good job of, by the way, in addition to our social media engine.
So outside of their own website?
Correct. So when we, Yeah, I mean, when we start promoting our stories on social media and elsewhere, and we're individuals, people are tapping into their own networks, that sort of thing. Once this thing really starts kicking into gear, think about what's happening there. People are clicking on your stories and coming back to your brand, coming back to the Forbes brand voice, the SAP voice platform. Not only are they spending time with our content, but they're being exposed to that creative advertising that wraps around the stories. And then the hope is that people actually click on those ads, which are linked back to our global campaign pages so people can learn more or watch a video. Again, spending time with the brand. This isn't a hard sell. It's just, I guess, a form of pull marketing that we have found works very, very well for us.
And do you also, I mean, SAP is famous for its content marketing efforts also, your own blogs and stuff like that. Do you use the native advertising to drive traffic to those content assets?
We do, but it's because SAP, the way things are structured at our company, there's a lot of different marketing teams, a lot of different, I guess, sub-organizations within the company that are responsible for their own marketing efforts. And so, in addition to the global advertising stuff I just mentioned, when we're driving people back to our global campaign pages, which is, our overall overarching, message. We have tons and tons and tons of people across SAP that we deal with, me and other people who are into helping other people become better storytellers and writers. We help them. We help them drive back to their assets, absolutely. They publish some of their stories. We might repurpose or syndicate some of their content, some of their stories, whatever it may be. If it's appropriate for our Forbes channel, we'll put it on there, and there will be a call to action or something else at the end of the story that will hopefully direct the reader back to download a white paper or whatever it is that they're trying to accomplish. Yeah, so it is absolutely used for that. And I guess the funny thing about that is that the people that who do use Forbes for that really don't understand what I just told you preceding this, right? They don't understand that what this is. They don't understand that this is really native advertising, that not only are they helping themselves, but they're helping the company in general by publishing this great content, right, on Forbes SAP Voice. So, in that instance, you can see how valuable the content is. It serves a bunch of different purposes. It serves the purpose of that individual business unit in addition to helping drive, eyeballs to our global campaign pages.
So does that mean that you are both getting the brand awareness on the platform itself? So people reading Forbes, looking at your content, realizing that's by SAP, enjoying the content on that platform,
Yes.
and you're also using it to drive traffic to your campaigns, your actual advertising campaigns. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. That's definitely true. It's not as, it's not as formal and it's not as tactical as maybe an email blast or some other form of content marketing, but it's certainly part of the mix.
And then if I understand it correctly, then you're also, using it to drive people down the funnel, in terms of downloading a white paper and to the different business units.
Right, absolutely. And, that is determined by them. I can only assume that it's successful for them because we keep working with them. Like we said before, it's tough out there, right? Everybody's overloaded and overwhelmed with content. They're going to go to where the readers are, where the action's at. And for us right now, and it has been for a number of years, it's Forbes. Forbes does a tremendous job for a variety of different reasons. So in addition to those individuals who are coming to me and to others to get their content onto Forbes, again, if you go back to those who, readers who click on the banner ads that we have on there and the creative, that links back to our global campaign pages. If they want to learn more, we will capture their registration information. They will fill out voluntarily, that they'd like to learn more from SAP. That actually performs for us. I don't have specific numbers, but it's good. We are happy with that performance. Yeah.
Could you tell us a little bit more about how you measure success? I mean, do you have KPIs or metrics that you use?
We rely very heavily on our monthly and quarterly reports from Forbes. We have a call with them every month to talk about what worked, what didn't work. We walk through time spent per page, what was the most socially active post, all that stuff. Who are the influencers that are retweeting our stories and sharing it with their audiences? Brand impressions are also important, very big. I guess some would argue that that's a very soft metric, and sometimes I guess it is. But in the context of Forbes, if you're talking about brand impressions across Forbes, it becomes a much less soft metric. It becomes much more real because you're talking about real impressions there. You know, you're talking about people who were exposed to our brand on Forbes. And when you add it all up every month, we're talking millions of impressions, which is huge. It's very important. As opposed to maybe Twitter impressions, those are assumed impressions, right? You're talking about, well, this person has 50,000 followers. Let's add that into the metric and make it seem like, you know, there's a potential there that somebody could have seen this tweet or this story or something like that. That's not what these brand impressions are on Forbes. These are very, I guess you'd say, much more tangible brand impressions about just how our content is circulated throughout their site. And they do a very good job of tracking that. But overall, when you talk about page views, the amount of posts that we publish, all of that stuff, it performs above just general industry benchmarks, and it performs above what Forbes has set as benchmarks for brand voice partners. Consistently across the board, it performs above those benchmarks. And you know how it is. I mean, page views go up, go down. Volume of posts go up, go down. We're not really so concerned about that anymore. I mean, if it dips too low, obviously there's a concern. If it dips below industry benchmarks, then it's time to really reexamine what we're doing. But for now, the way we measure things is, you know, basically through these broader metrics. You know, you can get a really good idea of what's going on. And you can dive deep too. I mean, you can look at individual stories and that sort of thing if you want to.
Yeah.
But if we're right at the benchmarks or performing above, you know, that's satisfactory for us for sure.
Do you use any like more hard metrics? Like you say you drive traffic to your campaign sites, for example. Mm-hmm. Do you track, you know, conversion or the sales that can be tracked back to your native advertising?
We probably can. We haven't looked into that too deeply, but we probably should. I think that's the next area for us. I think in the past, I just don't know if we had that information at our fingertips. You know, I think we were just so concerned on trying to see if this thing worked. But now that we've kind of found our footing, you know, for a while now, I think that you actually raise a really good point. I think that that is probably what's coming next for us. We really need to figure out what kind of impact beyond the awareness, you know, beyond the traffic, you know, how is this affecting SAP's business? I think that's next for us.
And so could you give us a little, so aside from Forbes, what other current native advertising, you know, either bigger projects or smaller projects do you have at the moment?
We're testing out a few things. We did do a pilot with Inc. magazine late last year that went very, very well for us.
Okay.
And it's similar to Forbes, right? I mean, it's the classic example of partnering with a very well-branded publisher, popular publisher in this case, Inc. magazine. They create a landing page for you, and you assimilate to their brand a little bit. But again, across the site, you know, those native ad impressions that they're promoting out for you, it's very clear that you're an advertiser, right?
Yeah.
You are part of this, you know, system that they have. And again, that worked very well for us. It was a pilot. We had a good mix of content. We had a couple of videos that we just put out there, and it did very, very well for us. So we may go back to Inc. We may re-up that investment with them. So we do have that constantly kind of bubbling in the background, and we're trying to figure out how we want to expand native with some of those bigger publications next. We also do, I guess you'd say, a little bit more tactical and smaller sized investments with other capabilities and partners. We've done some things with Flipboard. I don't know if it constitutes native advertising per se, but it certainly enhances our native advertising efforts. So,
and how do you do that?
Yeah, with Flipboard, it's you're paying to have your stories promoted on their platform. So if you're familiar with how Flipboard works, you know, it's I guess primarily a mobile experience, a tablet experience, and it's a very personalized reader experience. So as readers are flipping through their stories at the end of the day or whenever they're spending time on Flipboard, if it's appropriate, if it makes sense, one of our stories will pop up in their feed.
Okay.
And so you get a lot of exposure that way. All indications point that that works. You know, it's a good way to add a little bit of a boost to your content if you need to. Because I think it's probably because it's a non-intrusive thing. You know, it's a story. You know, it's already there. You're not really asking anyone to go anywhere. It just kind of pops up. But all under the guise of probably, you know, this is content that fits in with whatever the category is that reader's reading. So, you know, we're assuming that if somebody's reading some technology stories, one of our technology stories will pop up in their stream. So, you know what I mean? So it's not so offensive. It's not so intrusive. it kind of plays into what they're already reading and looking at. And we do see a little, you know, a nice bump, you know, in traffic and exposure for that.
Mm.
Similarly, we're working with Undertone, which is, you know, again, it's more of, I guess, this sort of second wave of native advertising providers. So they're not necessarily a big branded magazine like Forbes, but they offer, you know, a similar sort of syndication and amplification process, if you want to call it that. So they will be, we will be working with them, I should say, to get some of our content through their system and platform, which helps get our stories onto other websites.
Could you explain to the listeners who don't know Undertone a little bit about how that works?
Yeah, I mean, if you're familiar with some of these other amplification tools, like I guess you'd say Outbrain or some of the other ones, Taboola,
mm-hmm.
these are, I guess you'd say, technology providers that have figured out a way to partner with maybe a bunch of different magazines as opposed to one. And your story won't appear, you know, certainly within, you know, the main content flow of the publication, but it may appear at the bottom of a main web page, you know, under a category that says, you know, you might also like, right?
Right.
Or to learn more or read more, or, you know, something that, again, not intrusive, something that plays well with whatever page you're already on. It's a nice way to, I guess, again, assimilate with that publication without, you know, again, being intrusive. It's a good fit. You know, this is what it's all about. And I think companies like Undertone and some of these other providers, you know, they have to constantly innovate. They have to figure out these algorithms as to where your content goes and what publication it gets blasted out to. We are still finalizing some details with Undertone.
Okay.
And some of that actually, and Undertone is a little bit different in that some of our experiences that they are promoting will have a little bit more of a brand component to it. And so we need to finalize some of those details with them as well. So I think it's under, something like Undertone is a good mix. You know, it's not, like I said, it's not, you're not necessarily advertising with them like you would the New York Times or something like that. But, you know, you are getting your brand out there in a different way, you know, in a pretty powerful way.
And do you use other native advertising options like at LinkedIn, their sponsored content, their sponsored options?
We might have in the past. There might have been even others before me who have tested that out. That sounds like something that we could have done. Mm-hmm. It sounds like something that maybe we should probably look into a little bit more. And the reason why I say that is because of, I guess, some of the metrics that we see from Forbes and elsewhere. A lot of stories that we publish get a lot of traction on LinkedIn.
So organically.
Yeah, organically. Yep, absolutely. Mm-hmm. A lot of traffic comes from LinkedIn, or you see a lot of posts that have been shared very, very actively on LinkedIn. And not all from SAP people, don't forget. These are certainly people that are probably connected to someone at SAP at some point, but not. It's not all employees who are trying to game the system here. Like you said, this is very much earnest, organic traffic that is happening.
Mm.
I'm assuming probably because the story is interesting. You know, how else do you explain that?
I've talked to a couple of business publications, like publishers themselves, who are experiencing a lot of success on LinkedIn, just distributing their content organically,
mm-hmm.
and something that they've been doing a lot more since Facebook changed their algorithms back in January. You know, because you know they were punishing the publishers on that one, but LinkedIn still has a very, you know, a solid organic reach for if you're in the B2B space.
Yeah, I think they do. You know, I think they do. I think so far LinkedIn is making the right decision. I don't think you need to. Well, I mean, I think with Google and the way they change their algorithms around, they're trying to get, you know, weed out some of the dishonesty, because certainly there are a lot of clickbaity type stories out there.
Yeah.
But with LinkedIn, it's great. You can, you know, publish there natively still if you want, or you can do a lot of what I do and what others do. You publish on Forbes or maybe one of our other channels at SAP, and you just link to it, right? You can share it on LinkedIn, which I think can work very well, as you know, also kind of accomplishes everything you need.
Right. You put a lot of money into platforms like Forbes, and you did the pilot with Inc., as you said.
Mm-hmm.
How are the different publishers involved in the whole process? Are they involved in so you get some of the metrics like you mentioned before, some of the data, but are they involved in the process, or how does that collaboration play out?
They are, in so much as just setting up new contributors. If there's some other technical problem with the platform, they are involved to talk about any new innovations on the back end, publishing capabilities, and new, you know, bells and whistles that we can use. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, yeah, it's you know, the content is all ours. You know, we rely 100% exclusively on our own brand journalists.
So you've never worked with like an agency like the T-Brand Studio for the New York Times or something similar to that?
We have not. I think that is definitely on our on our radar. You know, we definitely mm-hmm. want to talk to the New York Times at some point about how they do native, but probably for something bigger and broader, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it seems like that's a good fit for SAP to embark on.
Yeah.
A bigger, broader campaign where we would absolutely need their help. You know, there's no doubt about it. That's where their expertise would come into play. There's no doubt about it. But I think we're talking about Forbes and pretty much blogging and storytelling. I've always maintained, you know, who better to tell the SAP story than its own employees, right? So that's why we do what we do from that standpoint. We don't really rely on any agencies or even Forbes to create any content for us. But they do have that there if you need it, you know.
Yeah, but because it's kind of a combination, right? Because you, like you say, who better to tell the SAP story? But at the same time, if you want to make it truly native,
right,
you need to make it really native to that specific publication. And that's one of the value propositions of the different content studios that the publishers have,
right?
Is that they are experts at telling stories, you know, to their audience.
That is true. That is very true. And I try to reiterate that to our contributors, you know, all the time. You know, put yourself in the shoes of the reader. In this case, think of the Forbes reader, which is broad. You know, there's no doubt about it. Forbes is not just about, you know, how to get rich quick stuff. You know, if you look at what's trending on Forbes now, it's politics, it's video games, movies, entertainment, food, it's everything, right? Now, that still is helpful, I think, if you tell people that, as broad-based as it is, it's become a little bit more arts and entertainment and cultural. I think by letting our contributors know that this isn't just a place for you to go and shout about SAP, that's important. And then I can say, look, go look at what's trending on Forbes and try to maybe back into some of the stories. It doesn't always have to be about SAP because, remember, we always will have that branding at our backs on our stories. Mm. So to give you a good example of that, if we're to use a really extreme example of not talking about SAP, you know, occasionally myself, others will, and we used to do this more in the past. We actually used to write a lot of stories that really had nothing to do with SAP at all. We would write about video games or movies or TV.
Okay.
I recently wrote a story about innovations in the wood pellet grill industry. And people will say that, you know, what does that have to do with SAP? Well, mm-hmm. not much of anything, but it is a really interesting story. Not so much that I wrote it, but because I interviewed a bunch of manufacturers, they're telling me all about their business challenges and innovation and entrepreneurship. All of that good stuff plays into everything that SAP is about anyway. Mm-hmm. And like I said, you got the branding around that story. So think about 40, 50, 60,000 people coming back to your story, being exposed to your brand. I mean, that's really what it's all about.
Yeah, and I guess striking the right chord in terms of making a real Forbes-worthy story mm-hmm. is a little bit easier for you, having worked with Forbes since 2011. I'm assuming that, you know, a new company that comes on as a brand voice company would really need to put a lot of effort if they wanted to create everything themselves to make it, you know, be perfect for Forbes.
Yeah. It is a little bit challenging, but if we were to look at the example of Inc., similar to Forbes, but a little bit different, a little bit more of a Silicon Valley flair, a little bit more of a startup flair. So we kind of honed our strategy to reflect that a little bit more, because we do have a big presence in the startup space, you know, and so we do have stories to tell there. And so we can do that. We can become a little bit more targeted in how we talk about things and be respectful and mindful of, again, what the publication is all about. This isn't a shouting platform. You have to assimilate to what it is that they're doing and kind of work backwards that way. Having said that, though, I mean, we still use these platforms to, again, like I said, get our message out. You know, we have sometimes mini campaigns, right? We have stuff that deals with, good example would be, we have something called Women Forward that's happening now, all about a community that we're building for women.
Okay.
Just all about women entrepreneurship, all that good stuff, right? And to some of the points that you raised earlier, we use Forbes to tell these great stories about women who have overcome some sort of adversity or that sort of thing. And, you know, we will publish these stories on Forbes elsewhere, and they will drive back to, again, landing pages, campaign pages, things like that, so people can learn more about what it is that we're trying to accomplish.
And would that also drive traffic back to the new website or the new platform that you're building with stories for female entrepreneurs?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, that's all part of it. You know, it all helps. And those stories, you know, kind of go back and forth. So if you were to look at, you know, I mean, you could Google in Women Forward SAP, and it would take you, you would find the Women Forward landing page. Mm-hmm. And you would see some of our content on there.
Okay.
You know, some of it may not be on Forbes, but it is, for the most part, employee generated.
Okay.
We have, just in the past 6 months or so, we started up a new platform on Medium. So we're trying to get our brand journalists to get out there a little bit more and be where we typically aren't. And I think Medium is another great platform to try and get your message out there.
But that's a pay-to-play game as well, isn't it, on Medium?
Medium is not. Medium is free.
Okay.
I think you can pay like $5 a month for an individual contributor just so you can read all of their stories. We haven't figured out Medium completely yet. It's a little bit of an experiment, but a fun one. Mm. You know, it's a huge, huge audience. And again, just as we talked about, you know, being sensitive to how Forbes portrays itself and the types of stories it publishes, Inc., on down the line. Medium is the same thing. You know, I mean, I think it's a true, if you want to call it a thought leadership platform, you know, I'm not really a big fan of that term, thought leadership, because I think it's become to mean too many things to too many people.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, a thought leadership platform. You know, there's a lot of big brands there now. There's a lot of true thought leaders publishing stories there, right? Elon Musk, I think, publishes there.
Yeah, a lot of things has been happening over the past year with Medium.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
It goes up and it goes down. You know, people like it, people don't. But it's another place to be. You know, why not? Why not give it a try and see what happens? But that's more community-based. It's not native advertising. You know, you have to spend some time there. And really, if you want it to work, you have to get involved with the community. You know, start following people that you have, you know, a like mind with, that sort of thing. So
you said before that you used Forbes also, or the native advertising things, to drive traffic to your own website. You know, this idea of rent to own strategy, you know, you want to rent the eyeballs of a publication to drive it to your own platform so you can eventually own that audience. That's especially some of the publishers that go into native advertising, especially just when they embark on that journey, are a little concerned with that. You know, some are saying, you know, if we let them drive traffic out of our platform, then, you know, eventually they won't need us anymore. What would you say to those publishers? Is that a fair concern?
I guess it is a fair concern. To be honest with you, I haven't really given it much thought, but now that you mentioned it, I do think it is a fair concern, but I don't necessarily think it's anything to be concerned about. You know, I think think about, again, if you just go back to the traditional definition, form, and function of native advertising, right, which is driving people back to your platform and they get exposed to the creative ads. I mean, which works for us. It may not work for a lot of people, but it is working for us. That's, I think, all you need to really worry about if you're a publisher and if you are, you know, the advertiser. I can't imagine that Forbes, or just, again, using Forbes as an example, I can't imagine that they're suffering any traffic because people are, you know,
they might survive.
Yeah, you know, they're doing fine. But, you know, this is probably a little bit too earnest of a definition of what their intentions are, because, you know, they're a business, they're trying to make money. I get that. But they really did a great job of bringing people together, didn't they?
Yeah.
And I think that was one of their goals. They said, look, and I think it was Louis Dvorkin, who's no longer with the company, but he was the primary brainchild of AdVoice, which turned into BrandVoice. He saw that opportunity. He's like, you know, this is ridiculous. You know, this is a new time, a new era.
Mm.
You know, the people who work at companies who are advertising come from all walks of life. I mean, look at me. I was a journalist.
Right.
there's other people that come from all kinds of different companies with all these amazing stories to tell, right? And they bring all of these life experiences with them. So let's not just look at this as advertising. Let's look at this as, you know, yes, they will have to pay us, but we are giving them a doorway into our audience, and let's see what happens from there. Let's see if we can bring these people together. And it does work. I mean, can't forget that there are people out there that are, in our case, looking to have their business problems solved. And if they come across some of our content, you know, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And if they reach out to us, that's even more amazing.
Speaking of reaching out, you did the pilot with Inc., for example. If there are publishers who want to, you know, get SAP involved in a native advertising project, how would they pitch you? You know, how should they approach you?
We are very much a results-oriented, driven business, and especially with native advertising and content marketing, we don't like publishing content for the sake of publishing content.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to see results. If somebody wants to approach me about partnering on some native stuff, I need to see results, you know, of the platform, what you've done for other companies,
okay,
any sort of case study, and tell me how your platform's different. You know, if it's something cool, new, and wacky, yeah, I'd love to hear about that. Absolutely. You know, but make sure that there's, you know, some potential ROI attached to it somehow. You know, this isn't, we're not really attracted to technology for the sake of technology, or, you know, again, publishing content just for the sake of it, because so many other people are doing that and they're not getting results. Let's not add to the confusion. You know, let's be a part of the conversation. So that's really most important, is just show me the results that, you know, your platform provides, and then, you know, maybe we can talk about partnering on something.
And are there something about some other things they need to be good at? For example, we talked before about the content studios.
Mm-hmm.
They definitely need to internalize some sort of agency project management, some of the things that agencies are good at. But are there other things that they need to be good at? I mean, they have a platform. Let's say they might have created some good results before. What else do they need to be good at to be a good partner for you?
Well, they have to be good listeners. They have to be creative thinkers. As you can imagine, after all this time, we have a really amazing relationship with Forbes. I don't consider them a place where we just publish stuff. I consider them, you know, true partners and confidants, advisors, that sort of thing. And so that same sort of mentality has to happen with other people we partner with. It's critical, you know, that, you know, they are trusted partners and that it's not a transactional relationship. You know, so that trust has to be built up. It doesn't happen right away, I get that. But if they are business models to be set up in a transactional way and not be empathetic to what our needs are, then we're not really interested in partnering with them.
That was a bit of advice for the publishers. What kind of advice would you give for brands if they are thinking about going into native advertising? What do they need to think about before, and what do they need to have in place?
Well, it helps to, I hesitate to say to have a strategy in place, but you should really have a pretty good idea of what you want to use this for. I think a lot of people get lured to the fact of, again, having access to this amazing platform, right? Or platforms. And they are amazing, and they will get you results. But you have to do it the right way. And for us, you know, as we've proven, it's all about the quality of the storytelling. The native is really a means to an end. You know, for us, it really is. It starts with the stories, the quality of the stories, are the headlines sharp, those types of things. So I would also, if you're going down a similar path that we have with a native strategy that relies heavily on content, even if you're not writing this stuff yourself, if you're not creating this stuff yourself, if you don't have an internal studio that's creating this, if you are relying on the partner to help create this content for you, just make sure it's on the up and up. I mean, that's what it's all about. It's not enough just to say, okay, I gave you this, all of this money, have at it, make me famous. You know, you have to be involved, and you have to really babysit and, just be detail-oriented.
So you need to be more involved than you are, you know, with traditional advertising, for example. That's more of an agency play where the brand might, you know, give a brief and then they, mm-hmm. they kind of step away. Is it what you're saying, that you need to be more constantly involved in this?
I think so. I mean, at least for us, because we aren't with Forbes, it's become sort of this living, breathing thing. You know, it's not like, okay, for 3 months we're going to do this campaign and then we're out. Because a lot of people do that. And you can and should do that, right? Maybe that's another recommendation. You know, don't feel like you need to bite off more than you can chew with this. If you want to get tactical with it, you should. You know, use it for what you think you need to use it for. But I absolutely would not get into this just for the sake of getting into it, or thinking that, you know, overnight you're gonna, you know, see all kinds of amazing success. So you just have to be thoughtful of your strategy and think about what you really want to use it for. Again, SAP, it's different. You know, we are involved in so many different lines of business, and we have so many different solutions and products. 90,000 employees, we're pretty much have presence, you know, in every country around the world. That offers us, you know, a huge canvas to tell all kinds of different stories, whether it's through our customers or something else. So for us, in many ways, it's easier, you know, because we have all these stories to tell. If you're not as big or as broad as SAP, you actually might have a little bit of a challenge, you know. So you have to get really, really creative with how you get your stories out there and how you get your brand out there. And it does. It just does. Takes time. I think you do need to be involved. It isn't just enough to, again, cut a check to the publisher and just let them run that for you. I mean, you have to be involved. It's not as automated as people think. I think there's definitely a lot of manual work involved to make it successful.
Let's finish off by looking ahead a little bit. So first, in terms of the industry, where do you see the native advertising industry going in the next, let's say, 12 months or so?
Well, I think that we're probably going to see some new capabilities come out, some new offerings. I'm not quite sure what that's going to look like. I do feel that we need to see some more. You know, we need to see what else is next, and I do believe that we're probably going to start to see that within the next year. Whether it's I don't know, more video components that tie into native ads, you know, I don't know. You know, I think that that is in many ways to be determined, but I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing more robust capabilities come out within the next 12 months. I have no idea what that is. Like I said, I'm just assuming that it's probably going to involve some more video. There's got to be, I think, you know, some disruptors, right? I mean, this is what's constantly happening as industries around the world are constantly getting disrupted, and wouldn't be surprised if, you know, the native advertising industry also gets a little bit of a shakeup with something, you know, at some point. You know, it can't just be, you know, brands partnering with publications. There's got to be more to it than that. And I know there is. There's hundreds of native providers out there. I can't imagine that they're all offering something different. You know, I think there's a lot of overlap with capabilities and offerings. And, you know, like I said, with industries being disrupted, I imagine a lot of those folks won't be around within a year. So we'll probably see that. We'll probably see some sort of disruption, I think. I'm not sure what that would be, but I think it's going to, if it's not going to come from a Forbes or an Inc or something like that, it will force a Forbes or an Inc to rethink their model, right? That's what disruption does. And they will be able to do that. But for some of the smaller players, you know, I'd probably be a little bit concerned if I were them, because at some point you're not going to probably have a revenue stream. You know, you're going to have to kind of step it up and prove your worth. Otherwise, you're probably not going to have any clients, you know.
So they have to ramp it up. And what about you guys at SAP? What are you working on now? What can we expect to see from you in the future?
Well, because you know, the Forbes stuff is such a blessing and a curse, right? I mean, it works so well for us that it's really, really hard for us to find value in a lot of these other platforms, like I just kind of said. You know, I mean, because they do such a good job, it's a very holistic platform. They're constantly innovating and improving how they do things, that it's hard for us to seriously consider a lot of options, you know. Having said that, we are still trying to innovate. We're still looking at different native advertising opportunities, let's just say that. But really, whatever we decide, it will have to fit in with some of the things that we're working on, okay? So for example, you know, our business, we just broke out customer experience as a separate reporting line for our business, okay? Some of that is through acquisitions, some of that is through our own technology, but it is its own separate business that will be appear on our quarterly earnings. So when you think about that, right, we're renaming CRM customer experience. We're trying to reclaim some of the market share that maybe we've lost in customer experience and CRM. And think about how native advertising could help with that, right? That's a big deal. That's a really big deal. and helping get the word out and help raising awareness and help strengthening our brand and making people aware of what it is that we offer that the others don't. That's all native advertising. That could do a really amazing job in, like I said, raising awareness. Again, not so much driving leads and tactical things like that, but just an overall momentum push. That's what native advertising for, and that would be amazing for that. We are also talking about the intelligent enterprise at SAP, which will also plug into a lot of our native advertising efforts. Okay, and intelligent enterprise is, you know, it comprises machine learning, artificial intelligence, a lot of capabilities that we offer. And again, what better way to raise awareness about some of these capabilities than through native advertising? And imagine the crazy good stories we can tell, right? I mean, everybody loves a good, you know, robot story or something, right? I mean, these are really good stories that we can tell and help raise awareness about our brand. Yeah.
It doesn't sound like you're going to be running out of things to write about anytime soon.
Definitely not. Never a shortage here. Never a shortage.
That's perfect, Tim. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to, you know, share with us about how you work with native advertising.
No, my pleasure. Anytime.
Thank you so much, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Okay. Take care.
You
bye.
Too. Bye. Thank you, Tim, for a very interesting peek under the hood of one of the longest running native advertising projects out there. And for our listeners, if you like what you've heard, please drop us a review on iTunes or SoundCloud. And while you're there, make sure you subscribe. You can also be notified each time we launch a new episode by signing up for our podcast newsletter at nativeadvertisinginstitute.com/podcast. And finally, if you want to learn more about native advertising, please join us in Berlin for Native Advertising Days, November 6th through 8th. Visit nativeadvertisinginstitute.com/days for more information. That's all for now, folks. Next time, we'll have Anna Arvidsson on the show. She's head of Bunya News Brand Studio and running a 50-people team out of Stockholm in Sweden. So make sure to be back for more advice on how to build your own native advertising powerhouse.
That's it, you guys. Remember to subscribe to the Native Advertising Powerhouse podcast on iTunes or SoundCloud.